Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast. I'm your host, Erin Harris, and my guest for this episode is Dr. Scott McClellan. He's the CMO at Orca Bio, the Menlo Park, California-based clinical stage biotech, developing a pipeline of high-precision allogeneic cell therapy products that are designed to safely replace patients' diseased blood and immune system with a healthy one. Scott, thanks for being here. Welcome to Cell and Gene, the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Good. Okay, so I just explained Orca Bio, but I would love to hear it from your words. So talk us through Orca Bio and the company's mission.
Sure. So Orca Bio is a cell therapy company, which its origins really trace itself back to Stanford University. Two of our founders met each other there. They're both interested in stem cell biology. And they founded Orca really with the mission to improve outcomes in patients undergoing allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell therapy transplants. And I'll just, for brevity, I'll just refer to that as allotransplant moving forward. So again, Orca was founded about 7 years ago. I joined the company about 5.5 years ago and have been part of the clinical development team since then. We currently have two cell therapies in the clinic. One, the most advanced one is called ORCA-T, and we have a next generation product that's called ORCA-Q, which I'm happy to tell you about each of those therapies as we move forward with the discussion.
We're going to get to especially ORCA-T a little bit later in the conversation, yeah. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, so you're the CMO, and I wanted to learn more about what it is you're focused on in your role this year, even into a little bit into next year. What are you personally going to be working on at Orca?
Absolutely. So I think our major area of focus for this year is actually a phase three study, which we initiated a couple of years ago. And that's a phase three of testing ORCA-T versus a standard of care allogeneic stem cell transplant. So ORCA-T is really designed to replace a standard transplant in that setting. And we're getting close to full enrollment for that study. And we will hope to have data availability sometime in the next year or so. And so I think we're really in the mode of making sure that our data is robust and clean. But, you know, beyond the phase three, we also have what I believe to be quite a robust pipeline. And we can talk a little bit more about that if you like.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And we can do that as we go on. I want to kind of go through your whole pipeline all at once. Before we get to that, I do want to talk kind of broadly, though, about, you know, the various toxicities that continue to stymie the allogeneic cell therapies and in what ways. I think Orca has a really nice handle on this, and I was wondering if you could talk us through, you know, why the various toxicities continue to, you know, kind of challenge us. What's the path forward, and how do professionals balance the need to reduce toxicities with survival?
Right. Yeah, I think I would just start off by pointing out that allotransplant is even today often the only curative therapy that many patients have. You know, for example, with patients with acute myeloid leukemia, particularly if they have poor risk disease, the allotransplant is really the only option available for a cure. However, that cure is unfortunately counterbalanced by a lot of risk. And the risks are many. I think one in particular to highlight is graft versus host disease. So these are, of course, are transplants that are coming from a donor, and where the cells are actually going into the recipient. And in many cases, the donor cells can recognize the recipient's tissue as foreign and attack it just as it would attack a pathogen in a normal setting. And that can cause, there's really two flavors of graft versus host disease that are important in the clinic. The one that happens first typically is called acute graft versus host disease, and that can attack organs such as the liver, the gut, and the skin. And then a second form of graft-versus-host disease is called chronic graft-versus-host disease. And that really can attack many different organs and has somewhat of a scarring phenotype. So it can cause the skin, for example, to take on a scarred-like appearance. It can cause dry eyes, dry mouth, lung issues. So the problem is, this is really the only viable patient option that many patients have, but then they're faced with these dangers. And the dangers can be, graft-versus-host disease can be fatal, but even when it's not fatal, it can have really negative consequences for quality of life. And then with regard to how risk and benefit are balanced, I think, this is a decision that the transplant physician and the patients have to make together. There are, various options that you can choose. So, for example, some transplants are given with what's called fully myeloablative chemotherapy or radiation. And that really means that you're, quite literally ablating the patient's blood-forming system and immune system. And typically studies have shown that approach probably has the most curative potential, but it also has probably the most toxicity, right? So there's a balance. When you dial up the intensity of the therapy, you also dial up the risk. Another trade-off you could make, of course, is to give less intense chemotherapy, but then the risk of the underlying malignancy relapsing goes up.
Sure, that makes sense. Now, given all that we know about graft versus host disease, tell us a little bit about what Orca Bio's approach, what is your approach to potentially lowering the risk?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, with the standard of care transplant, the source for the material that actually is given to the patient is either to the donor's peripheral blood or their bone marrow. And in the setting of standard of care, both whether it's from the marrow or the blood, you're really transferring an uncontrolled mix of cells. So that includes many different cell types, and the proportions and dosages of those cell types is uncontrolled. And for years, the literature has suggested that amongst that bulk population, there are cells that are beneficial to the patient, and there are cells that are likely to be the bad actors when it comes to causing graft-versus-host disease. So our approach at Orca is fundamentally to take this starting material from the donor and then refine it and produce what we call a high-precision cell therapy, so that we are actually controlling the doses and proportions of the various cells that are being administered to the patient.
I want to now talk about your pipeline a little bit. At the
Yeah.
top of our discussion, we talked a little bit about Orca T, Orca Q. First off, I'd like to talk about Orca T. And
Sure.
as I understand it, it's the investigational high precision allogeneic cell therapy that's being evaluated in clinical trials for the treatment of multiple hematologic malignancies. Now, it's currently in a pivotal phase three clinical trial at a leading transplant centers across the US and has received RMAT designation from the FDA. So tell us where we're at with Orca T and, if you could share some highlights of the data that has been shared on this therapy to date.
Sure, absolutely. So we presented data most recently at the most recent ASH in December of last year, and then at Tandem, which was just a few weeks ago, the Tandem meeting. In both of those cases, we are right now, of course, we don't have pivotal data available. So we are displaying our data from our phase one studies and are comparing them to historic controls. Obviously, there are a lot of caveats to that technique, and again, the pivotal data is what's going to really be definitive to addressing the question, is the Orca T approach better than a standard allotransplant? But preliminary, what we've shown, I would really highlight by referring to an endpoint that I think is popular amongst transplanters now, which is GVHD and relapse-free survival. So that's really asking the question. I know that's a mouthful, but that's really asking the question, in a year, 2 years, what percentage of your patients that have undergone a transplant are doing well? So they're living without clinically significant graft versus host disease, and they haven't relapsed. So it's sort of asking, like, what is the optimal, what percentage of your patients are achieving optimal survival post-transplant? And, compared to historic controls, we are seeing what we think is a significant improvement in that endpoint, GVHD and relapse-free survival. Again, this is all from single-arm trials, and we have to prove that benefit in the phase 3 study, which we hope to do soon. But, if we look at historic controls, the rate of GVHD and relapse-free survival at a year, for example, with ORCA-T is doubled in comparison to many of standard approaches from the past.
Good. Okay. How about the rest of your pipeline now? The top of our discussion, we talked a little bit about not only, of course, ORCA-T, but ORCA-Q. Tell us where we're at with the rest of ORCA's pipeline beyond ORCA-T.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that as a broad theme, our goal is really to try to expand the footprint of allogeneic transplant. And we're doing that in several different ways. So for example, I mentioned earlier the myeloablative approach to transplant. That's really not an option that's available to many patients, particularly patients that are older or more frail and have other comorbidities. So we wanted to test our products in a reduced intensity setting that will help those patients have access to allotherapy, which again, in many cases, the only curative option that patients have. So that's number one, testing ORCA-T and ORCA-Q in reduced intensity settings. Number two, as you may know, many patients don't have a fully matched donor. Mm-hmm. So, in many cases, patients will be transplanted with their sibling if they happen to be a full HLA match. Right. Many patients don't have an HLA match donor. And if that's the case, they need to look into the National Merit Donor Program registry or other registries to see if they can find an unrelated donor. Unfortunately, many races and ethnicities have a low chance of finding a fully matched donor in that database. So they need to resort to using mismatched donors, and there is increased risk in those settings. So we want to be able to bring the benefits of ORCA investigational drugs into that setting as well. So we're testing, for example, ORCA-Q in patients that have half-matched donors, called haploidentical. And most people do have a half-matched donor. Right? It could be it can be your children, it can be parents, it can be some of your siblings. So that really broadens the donor pool for many patients, particularly the races that are less well represented within the NMDP database. And I think as a third pillar, we're really trying to expand the footprint of allo beyond where it's used traditionally today. Yes. So for example, it's the most common indications are hematologic malignancies, and there are also some non-malignant hematologic indications, for example, hemoglobinopathies and aplastic anemia. So those are all important indications for us. But our hope is that, our cell therapies can be delivered in such a safe manner that we can think about using it in other diseases. So an example of that might be autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally what the transplant process is doing is taking a patient's diseased blood or an immune system and replacing it with a healthy blood and immune system from a healthy donor. So our hope is that we could apply that same logic to autoimmune diseases. Right. So in replacing a immune system that's malfunctioning with one that will behave normally, basically.
Great. Okay, thank you for that detailed explanation of Orca's pipeline. With all of that said, what does the rest of this year look like for Orca?
Yes. As I mentioned, we will be finishing enrollment on our phase three study. I should mention that our phase three study is actually event driven with regard to data readout. So we don't actually know exactly when the data availability will be. Again, we hope that that will be soon, but there is some uncertainty associated with that. But we do know that enrollment is going to be completed for that study. And then, of course, we're going to have a lot of work at that point, making sure that all our data is robust and clean. Beyond that, we will be increasing enrollment on our other study. For example, the ORCA-Q study, where now that we have, once we complete enrollment on the phase three, we'll have more bandwidth to focus on that study. And as I mentioned, we're really focusing on patients with haploidentical donors there. And asking the question, can we improve outcomes relative to standard of care haplotransfer?
Excellent, excellent. Well, as additional and more progressive data comes out, we would love to have you back on to kind of give us an update on where you've progressed to since this particular discussion.
Absolutely.
Good, good. Okay, well, listeners, we've come to kind of the formal end of our discussion at the end of every episode. I like to ask my guests who they are when they're not at the office or the lab, making life-saving therapies for the cell and gene therapy patient. So, Scott, here's yours. Looking back, what would you say has been your most favorite vacation spot and why? I know before we started the call, we both have children around the same age. And so I don't know if this is going to be like a family vacation response or,
Yes.
a pre-children vacation spot, but.
I have to say it was one that we took this summer. The first time we've ever traveled internationally with my children. They're finally old enough that that makes that both feasible and fun. So we actually went to London and then to Italy. And I would say specifically the part of Italy that we enjoyed the most is a small region in northern Italy called Lake Garda. So that was, that was a lot of fun for us. It's a really charming place. I mean, Italy's wonderful, of course, but Lake Garda was particularly charming for us.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, how did your children? I know my children, one is a highly picky eater. The other one is a foodie. So, how did your children do with the various cuisines in London and in Italy?
I think that's one of the other great things about Italy is that the food tends to be, sort of kid friendly at
Kid-centric, yeah.
baseline. There's a lot of, obviously most of the restaurants there are pasta or pizza themed, and those are both very popular with my kids. So they also love gelato, of course. I think everybody does. So we ate a lot of that while we were there.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a really good point that Italy lends itself to being very kid-centric when it comes to their cuisine. So you kind of can't go wrong. Even if the pickiest of eaters will sometimes, you can put some spaghetti in front of them and they'll be fine.
Exactly.
All right, listeners, that wraps up this episode of Cell and Gene the podcast. Thanks to Orca Bio's Dr. Scott McClellan for his time. Scott, thanks so much for being here. This was really enjoyable and informative, and we would love to have you back, like I said, when we can explore more data on what you guys have going on.
I'd love that. Thank you.
Absolutely. And to listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you soon.